Hi, this is Lindy, the creator and host of Lindy's Audio Cafe, a podcast focused on positive and thought-provoking stories. Life gets busy, and in the race for happiness, we sometimes forget it's often the smaller things in life that truly matter. My podcast is focused on the stories that don't make tabloids, the basics that make you smile, the kindness of people who help make the world a better place. Yeah, we need a bit more of that. But before we get started, please be sure to hit subscribe on your podcast app so you don't miss future episodes. Thanks for listening. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Lindy's Audio Cafe. My name is Lindy, and I'm absolutely delighted to join you once again today. I'd like to extend a very hearty welcome to those of you who are new to listening to my podcast series, and welcome back to everyone else who's been part of my journey. A quick overview of my podcast: when I started just over a year ago, it was fully my intention to keep it lighthearted, thought-provoking, fun, you know, on the positive side. I didn't want to get into politics or anything that was too negative. I just wanted to keep it upbeat. It, after all, was intended to be a hobby podcast, something I'm doing for fun, and I've always hoped to keep it that way. There is a topic that did arise, though, and I've decided to pursue it for this episode. And it all started with my hearing a news story this past summer about a gentleman who was organizing a festival on Vancouver Island called Soberfest. What a great name for a festival. And the name basically says it all. It was a sober festival. No alcohol, no drugs. And I was lucky to be able to reach out to the coordinator of the event, and he kindly agreed to join me on my podcast. And I was very pleased when he went one step further, and he even shared his personal journey with me on the weekend. It was quite a chat on Zoom, and I will tell you, it's the first time I've actually been brought to tears right in the middle of an episode, because his story really hit me in the heart. So I hope you have a chance to listen to this episode, and I will just quickly give an overview. The gentleman you're going to be listening to is Mike Manhas. He was raised here on Vancouver Island in Nanaimo. He got into alcohol and drugs when he was a teenager, went down the wrong path, had about 20 years of a very difficult journey, and eventually there was a turning point in his life that made a difference. He'll share that story with us. As a matter of fact, he proudly tells me that he's been over 9 years without having had a drink. That's great. That's really good. So stick around. I hope you'll enjoy Mike's story. Thanks again to Mike Manhas for coming on and sharing your life story with us. I'm going right into our call here and having a chat. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me. Mike, you have a very interesting story, and I thought rather than me spending a lot of time talking about it, I'd rather let you share part of your story to introduce yourself.
So my name is Mike Manhas. I'm an addict and alcoholic in recovery. I've been in long-term recovery for about 9 years now. I don't know, I can tell you a little backstory, I guess. I think growing up, I always felt I just didn't belong or something was missing. And I tried to fill it with alcohol. I tried to fill it with drugs. I tried to fill it with women. I tried to fill it with education. I tried to fill it with jobs. I tried to fill it with buying a house. Whatever I could do in order to fix myself, I had to fix the outside is what I kept thinking. And so I continued to struggle and struggle and struggle. And for 21 years, my addiction, at about 17, I started using cocaine, and my disease took off, and I became a daily user. And for 21 years on and off, I would go on large binges that would last a year, two, 3 years at a time. And then I would try and get off of cocaine by drinking myself into a stupor, and I would do that for a year, and then I would go back to cocaine, and then I would go back to alcohol, and I would just keep switching back and forth. And my last binge was 3 years, about 3.5 years. I had a great job in China. Again, I had to solve the problem. I thought if I left my home, if I left the island where I kept thinking was the other people, I could go get this job in China. I won't be able to get drugs there. I'll be able to clean my life up and everything will be great. I started drinking heavily in China. I had a great job. I was teaching at a university. made a ridiculous amount of money. My addiction started to take off again. I couldn't get enough of it in China, so I decided to move home. And I started using daily again. And I'm a teacher by trade. I stopped teaching. I just didn't renew my license, and I decided I'm going to use, and I'll figure out ways to make it work. And money was running out quick, and so I decided I should start selling drugs. And that went on for 3 long years, and it culminated with myself getting arrested 3 times in 8 months. With the last one was the North Island and South Island SWAT teams that surrounded my house. Things didn't look good. It was looking, they were asking for 6 to 8 years jail time. I had been caught with cocaine and amongst a few other things, and I didn't want to go to jail, so I thought I'd manipulate the system. I was just going to go to treatment, pretend that I got all better, get out of jail free card, and then head back and start selling again. And they say higher power. I say God. God had other plans. I did go to treatment. It was a tough 6 weeks. I went up just up in Cobble Hill. I was there for, I think, like 51 or 52 days. It was, when I first got there, I had no intentions of cleaning up. As I spent time there, they say the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, it's unparalleled. My whole life, I had people trying to tell me solutions that had no idea what I was going through. Finally, I was put in a place where everyone was going through what I was going through, and I could no longer feel isolated, alone, or unique. I had to come to terms that, other people were struggling and had their own traumas as well. I went through the program. I was still on the fence whether I was going to try and get clean or not. My first day out of treatment, I went home, went through a bunch of stuff. My brother kept calling. My brother was also struggling with addictions, was in jail at the time. He called me and said, someone stole my belongings. They're sitting at this house. You need to go get them. After his third call, I decided to go get them. And when I showed up at this house, I ended up finding a dead body. That was my very first day out of treatment. And to me, I was terrified I was going to run. Instead, I called 911. I did the right thing. I was supposed to be home for 5 days. I went back to the treatment center the very next day. And it was the very first time I surrendered and said, I had to surrender a bunch of times after that, but that was the very first time I said, I give up. This life's not working for me anymore. Tell me what to do. And so that was the start of my recovery journey.
Wow, that you're actually bringing me to tears just listening about this, because that's incredible. And I'm actually almost speechless here, which for me, anybody that knows me, I am brought to tears here, because it sounds like you've been through such a journey, and it sounds like you really came to an awakening moment, like, this can't happen anymore.
A phrase I hear often is, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah.
Like I was so exhausted and beaten. Being an addict or an alcoholic, it's a tiring job. Like, people think that, hey, we're just doing nothing, blah, blah, blah. It's a sickness. It's a disease. Majority of us don't want to be doing what we're doing, but we just don't know how to stop. And then to maintain it, we're doing things that we never thought we'd ever do. And it's so tiring. I was exhausted. I remember getting to the treatment center, and probably for the first week, all I could do was sleep. Like, I literally probably had slept maybe 300 days in the last 3 years. And that first piece of surrender, when you acknowledge that there's a problem, like, a sense of relief comes off, and it's like, okay, I can start. Maybe I can rest now. I don't have to fight anymore. And so, it's been a beautiful process the last 9 years. And I constantly, when I say that was the first time I surrendered, there's the disease isn't the problem was never the drugs or the alcohol. The problem has always been me. There was something missing, something that I didn't feel good enough, the insecurities, the fear, the anger, a lot of fear, where everything was being compensated by dumping copious amounts of whatever into my system to numb out or not feel or to try and feel better. And the reality was, I can't, like, whether I moved to, or I backpacked 35 countries, I I got 3 degrees. I bought a house, bought many cars. I taught in different countries. Like I did everything I could to try and fix the problem, which I thought was something on the outside. And the reality was the problem always lied with inside me. And to start healing myself was when I really started on my own healing journey.
And when you went into the place where you did your recovery, is that the right term for me to say, where you started your recovery? And your healing, was there a lot of counseling? Like, was it counseling also from licensed counselors, but from peers as well, people who'd been along that journey?
Every counselor there themselves was an addict or an alcoholic in recovery. And so that helped. And then there was a lot of the therapy that goes on is just working with others. So people that had a lot more time, but people that were also on the same journey with me.
The people that were helping you were people who experienced it. They knew what you were going through. They, like you say, it wasn't just a textbook that I've gone to school and I've learned how to help somebody. They're people that have walked in your shoes and they know that journey and they know what it feels like. And it did you find that made a difference for you to be able to talk to people who really got it? They understood.
I think it makes a world of difference. I think there's a fallacy out there that a doctor or a nurse or a clinician will be able to fix us, but we already feel unique. And so to have someone tell me that has no idea what I've been through, that this is how to fix it, there's no authenticity to it. But when there's another person who's actually experienced what I've experienced or connect that deep level of pain or anger or remorse or shame or guilt or fear, there's a bond that just instantly creates. And it's okay, maybe I can listen to this. Maybe there is some truth to this. You do know what I'm talking about. And there are solutions. We get hope. Like the biggest thing, there's a funny saying out there. Like I went from being this dope dealer to a hope dealer, where today we spread hope. And the reason I stay, I go to 12-step recovery rooms. And the reason I stick around and do events like Soberfest or other things is to provide hope for others that are coming in, to show them there are solutions and that life does get better and we can have fun.
And do you find people reaching out to you, people who are struggling, and now that they know that you've been through this and you've become a little bit more public, you know, with your profile as you organize Soberfest and you're involved in other events, do you find people reaching out to you directly?
They have been. I've been blessed that people have reached out to me for quite a few years now. But when they reach out to me, I think the one thing that most people take for granted is when they reach out to me, I'm getting more help than they are. Like I can offer them some hope, but they offer me hope as well, and they offer me solutions. One of the biggest tenets of recovery that I've heard, and I live by myself, is I can never keep what I have unless I give it away. And so every time someone calls, I get to share with them my journey, but they share theirs back and help my recovery grow. So.
That's amazing. We've taken what you've learned as well and, taken that and you've created different events and organizations where you can help other people. So I'm going to talk about Soberfest, for example. I first heard about that this summer and I was just grinning when I heard about it. And for me, it wasn't all about Soberfest per se. It was just nice to be able to have a really great event where you can go and you know there's not going to be alcohol and there's not going to be drugs. Sometimes you just want to be able to go and just relax, and it's easier to relax when you don't have to worry about that. And I was so impressed with that you started it. What can you tell us about Soberfest?
Soberfest has been, I've been putting on events for quite a few years, but Soberfest has been a dream of mine. It was exactly what you said. I wanted to provide a safe place for people to go. Not just people in recovery, anybody, for people in recovery as well. It's a place where like everybody deserves a chance to celebrate and to celebrate. Part of it was to celebrate each other. And part of it was to go somewhere where there's not a beer tent every 20 yards. And there's not people smoking and doing different drugs in every nook and cranny. And I've also had a common theme that I've been told is a lot of people in recovery will go to big festivals. And when they show up at these festivals, their goal is to stay clean. But they get caught up in the moment and there's always somebody that falls apart or a bunch that end up using and now back into a place of depth and despair. Mm. And so it's something I wanted to be a part of, but it was something that I thought our community needed. And I'd love to say, although I put the work in and I came up with the idea, I think something bigger than me came up with the idea. And I just happen to be the person that does the groundwork to make it happen. And so I feel blessed to be a part of it.
It sounds to me like you're a very spiritual person.
I am.
And I think that's excellent. I think that's great because, I can definitely say sometimes when that road's getting to be a little bit long and the journey's getting hard, sometimes something or somebody comes along and gives us that little boost behind the scenes and helps get us in the right direction and get us the support that we're really needing. And I think it's wonderful. And I look at the whole picture, and I know when you're talking about people being able to go to a place where they can safely celebrate, they can safely have fun. I recall a time many years ago going out with a group of people for supper, and I was sitting beside a man who I knew had quit drinking, and everybody at the table was ordering a drink, and I chose not to. I just thought, you know what, he doesn't need to be surrounded by this on all sides. Why can't I order something non-alcoholic? So I ordered a Shirley Temple. And I had so many people looking at me, well, don't you want a glass of wine? No, no thanks. I'm happy with what I've got. And, you know, I remember that night, and I can still remember looking at his face and kind of seeing the comfort in his face, like, oh, good, I'm not the only person at this table of 10 who's not having alcohol. There's somebody beside me not having some, too. And I didn't offer explanation or anything, and people look at you like, well, why aren't you drinking? And I found that even this past summer, you know, I'd be out camping and you get to know people around the campground and everybody's pulling out their six pack of beer or whatever they're having. It's like, here, would you like a drink? But I actually don't drink at all anymore. I haven't had a drink in over a year, and it's due to health reasons. And it actually made me really realize what people go through, because I'll be at a campsite, go, oh, no, thanks. I don't drink. I'll just have a ginger ale. Are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure. It's okay, thanks. And I just want to drop the topic. You have what you're having, I'll have what I'm having. And I noticed it multiple times, where about the third time, I'm going, no, I choose not to drink. I'm sorry, I just don't drink. And I get this feeling that people are looking at me, well, now I'm waiting for your story. It's nobody's business. I'm just saying no. No, thanks.
I get a bit of both. I've got people that are super conscious and don't want to do anything wrong, which just because they drink doesn't mean it shouldn't affect me. Like I have to build a strong enough program for myself, and yeah, it takes time. Like the reality was, the first couple of years, I didn't hang out at places where people were drinking or using. I just couldn't. I wasn't in a place. I didn't have the strength myself. Like other people do it, and power, like I don't, that's, everyone has their choice that way. But for myself, like I couldn't go to a crack shack, or I couldn't go to I couldn't go to drug dealers' houses. I couldn't go to bars. I went to a bar and I think I had 2 months clean. I'd just come out of the treatment center. We went to watch a UFC fight and I just kept sweating and I was like terrified and I wanted to use. And the only thoughts I couldn't watch the fights. I was watching other people drinking. I was watching other people getting up to go do drugs. And And it was like, it was terrifying. And it was a wake up call to me to realize, if I really want to make the change, I need to make the change. Like they say, there's only one thing you need to change in recovery about yourself, and that's everything.
Wow.
And so I had to start at the base level of, I don't go to them. Today, like I go to events, and like I was in Toronto and I have friends that are arguing. Like I got one guy calling saying he's mad at everyone because people were drinking in front of me. I'm like, it's okay. And like when it doesn't get okay, like the when people get loaded, they get obnoxious. And that's just my experience. Like I'm sure not everyone's that way. Like some people drink fine, they have a few drinks and they do their thing, but some people get fairly obnoxious. This happened when I was in Toronto in September, and one of the gentlemen, like we've all known each other for about 30 years, one of them got inebriated and was starting to be super obnoxious and wanting to fight everyone and argue. And it was like, so, and I was staying with a friend in his basement. There's a bar, like a club where they have pool tables and food, like a pub. And to get away from the obnoxious dude, I went to the bar. And because at least down there, I didn't have to deal with someone in my ear, and I removed myself. And then I came back up after I had some food and I said, I'm going to bed. And it's okay, right? Like, so there are people that are super protective, and I respect that, but I have to learn to adjust to that because I can't hide. And it's, I just can't hide. It's going to come up eventually. And if I build a strong enough program, and for me, it's about spirituality. When I have spirituality in my life, I know what's like going back. I've done this for almost 3 decades where I was using, or 2.5 decades of using, it never worked. And so for me to think it's going to work today is delusional. That's my disease talking. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense, but.
It totally does make sense. Actually, you explain it in a way that certainly allows you to look inside and see it from a different perspective, especially for someone like myself. I mean, I've known people who've struggled with alcohol addictions. I'll be honest, I've never really been exposed to anybody with a drug addiction, but I have been close to people who've had alcohol addictions, and it's a really tough one. Any type of addiction can be really tough. And I know people who have recovered have said they had to change their friends or just change who they were hanging around with. And it didn't mean they didn't like their friends anymore. They just knew that in order to move forward, there were certain people along the way that couldn't be part of the journey anymore.
Exactly. Like, you have to build your own stability. And then on the other note, like, I get the people that roll their eyes or wonder why. And sometimes I'll share why. And I'll talk about, I end up in cuffs, and this is why I end up in cuffs, and this is what we'll end up doing tonight, even though you don't think we will. If I open up a bottle, this is how it's going to end up. Yeah. And people usually are alarmed at that point and don't want to ask more questions or get it. But I think as my recovery's grown and as time has gone on, especially with the opioid epidemic out there, there are a lot of more empathetic people out there. And there is a change. Like, Soberfest was received. It was amazing how well it was received within our community. And like, so many people were supportive because every one of us out there has been touched by the disease of addiction by somewhere down the line in our friends or family. We've all been touched by addiction. And it's hard to escape today. And the empathy and the understanding for that is growing in our community. The understanding that something needs to change.
Absolutely. And so with Soberfest, when you had your event, it was pretty exciting. You had a multitude of musicians and bands, and I believe you sold out at that event as well.
We did. We were only allowed 500 people. We sold out. We had a demand for another 1,500 to 2,000 tickets. We raised $271,000 in cash and donations in kind for treatment. By the end of this month, I believe we'll have 6 or 7 people that we have sent to treatment. We've raised enough for 7 people will be getting some form of treatment, and 5 people in first stage inpatient treatment, an outpatient treatment, and a 1-year recovery coaching. And so I believe just the fact that we were able to help one person, I think it was a tremendous success. And to get momentum from that event, to realize it's been a passion of mine to help people and give back, because I've been so fortunate, and to be able to start a foundation. We started a thing called Rewired Recovery Foundation, which was the umbrella that Soberfest was done under. And I got sober, I got spiritual, and I get to live my dreams. Like, I'm living out my passions, and my passions are turning into dreams that I didn't even know I had. And there's just miracles that keep happening one after another in life. Yeah, life is. I was talking with a couple of people yesterday, and I'm just stunned at where life is today. When things are going along, and I think, hey, this is pretty great. I wonder how I would do this. I get a phone call, and someone says, hey, I heard you're doing this, or you've reached out and said, hey, I just wanted to have a chat, and it's showing me that I'm fortunate enough to be doing work that's greater than myself.
Absolutely. You're making a difference. And you had a really key point. You said if you even help one person, it's that dominoes effect. And every time they always say it's like pay it forward. You know, you help somebody and then they help somebody. And, you know, it's basically, as a society, we have to look after each other. And you're right, addictions really are a difficult thing. And behind every person who has an addiction is a person. You know, it was somebody's baby at one point, somebody's son, somebody's daughter, somebody's child. There's a real person behind there. And often, you know, my experience is with somebody who has any type of addiction, we don't get to see that beautiful inner side, because like you say, the disease or the substances are speaking for them. And if you can get rid of that substance abuse issue, often there's a really beautiful person still on the inside.
There's a common theme out there that addiction is a moral failing. And it's not, right? It's spiritually broken people that have gone through their own form of trauma. That, like, we can't assume what the person next to me has dealt with in their life. Only God knows, and only they know what they've had to endure. And for us to not provide help for people, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, our government should be doing more. Our community should be doing more. Alberta's come up with a new model where everybody's can access treatment for mental health and addictions, just like they can for diabetes, just like they can for cancer, just like they can for any other disease. We should have that same opportunity. And it's beautiful that they're putting a ton of money into harm reduction, but it's a shame that we're meeting people where they're at and we're leaving them there. That's a moral failing in my mind, is that we'll comfort you, but we're not going to give you the help you need because it's too expensive. And like, more needs to be done. And I feel Rewired is taking a step. We're taking a leadership role in that, is that, okay, we'll do, like, part of being in recovery is giving back. So we'll do our part, and maybe others will be inspired to do a little extra. And if each of us does just a tiny little bit extra, that's how we make a difference in this world right now.
Oh, absolutely. And what are the waiting lists like right now? Like, is it a hard time? Like, if you have somebody that wants to get into recovery, is it a long time to be able to get a bed or to be able to go somewhere?
It's 6 to 9 months to get a bed. So by that time, especially people who can't afford it, like, recovery is hard. Like, today you feel like you need to change, and you're ready to change. You felt like it for a while, but you're ready today. And they tell you, keep calling us back for the next 6 to 9 months. Or they put you into Island Health detox for 1 week, and then they put you back on the street.
And that's a huge one. Getting back on the street in the same environment, same people, I would think that would make it pretty hard, wouldn't it?
Or they put you in a transitional house where they're openly using heroin, crystal meth, crack, cocaine. And as you walk in through the door.
Really?
Yeah. So you come
Are you serious?
Yeah. You come out of detox for 5 days or a week, and they put you back into a transitional house. As soon as you walk in the door, right in the doorway, there'll be people using it. Some of them, they're either doing it right outside in the doorway, all through the hallways, in their rooms. I get it. We need to help all people, but like, to put so much money into supporting addicts, but not putting money into supporting addicts seeking recovery makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
We should be putting them into a safe place.
I agree. And a week is not enough. Week is nowhere near enough. You need time. I mean, I've never experienced it, so I know I'm speaking from inexperience, but I would think you would need time to get whatever's in your system out of your system and get clear-headed and have a chance to formulate a life plan. Does that make any sense? Am I on the right track with that?
Yeah. Otherwise, all treatment centers would be a week.
Yeah.
No treatment centers a week.
No, it doesn't make sense to me. And I just think back to other areas where I've been in where they've had treatment centers, and they take people out on the land and they get people working more with spirituality and nature. And I've heard really positive things about recovery places where people are taken out to a wilderness type resort where you're away from all those kinds of things that are going to be influences in front of you. And you have a chance to kind of spirituality wise get back to yourself, a chance to breathe, a chance to feel nature around you, a chance to get to work with yourself. And I don't know if we have that kind of thing here on the island.
We used to have a place called Hope Farm in it ended up being shut down for lack of funding. And I think, I believe, I don't know if it was the province or the city that took the license away. And so they didn't have a place to do it anymore. And they used to do it in conjunction with the mustard seed, and it was a great place. But there's, I think you're close to where it's at. It could be the therapy through the land. It could be therapy through animals. It could be therapy through talking to each other. And a lot of it's building structure, creating a new life. And to think that you can create a new life in 5 days is hard. To create a new life in 60 days is hard. But it gives you 60 days of stability. And then when you leave there, our goal as a foundation is when you leave there, we get you into a recovery house after, so that you don't go back to where you just were, and you don't go back to, or you don't even go back to your own apartment where you're sitting alone thinking, now what? And you get lonely and there's no supports. So now what? My mind starts to run and the likelihood of me using is pretty high.
Yeah.
If we put you into a second stage treatment right after, the likelihood of you recovering continues to move up and up and up. They say someone who goes to treatment, it's about a 3-5% success rate for somebody that just goes to treatment. They say someone who goes to treatment and then goes to a recovery house and stays there for a year, that percentage goes up to between 80-90%.
Wow.
And so if there's numbers showing that, why aren't we doing more? And why aren't we proving that those numbers are actually more legit? And part of it's on the addicts themselves. Like, I get it. Like, part of it should be the government funding, but part of it, having someone come into a recovery house and stay for 9 months to a year is hard, because people want to start, we start to feel better and we're like, okay, we're good, but we're not. It's a process. I'm not good. I'm always, my life is going great. I have a lot of good things happening for me. I own a farm in Machosen. My life is amazing. But I'm always one bad decision away from falling back into the depths of despair again. It's just one decision. So for me to think that I'm healed now, I'm not. I'm always healing. Just like a diabetic is never healed. They're always healing and they need insulin to maintain a status quo. I need my, whatever it is, for me it's a certain way, I need recovery. And whatever that recovery looks for each of us, I need that to continue to keep moving forward.
So what do you have for a support system? Like, who's your person in your life right now that gives you that support when you're having struggles?
I've got a sponsor that I use. I attend 12-step meetings. I have a home group that I go to. I do probably 2 meetings a week still. And then I have a sponsor that I do the 12 steps with, which is, for me, it's basically working on spirituality and taking ownership of my own life. We've all, there's been lots of trauma out there and lots of bad things have happened to lots of people. And it's wrong what's happened, but it's just as wrong for me to punish myself today for what others have done. And it's hard to let go. To let go of the bads or the harms that have been done. It's a process, but it's a process that's been made easier for me through the 12 steps of recovery.
Wow. So,
and then I have a support network of 5 guys that I keep close and that I call. I talk to them on a daily basis. I talk to at least 1 or 2 addicts every single day.
Good for you.
And then I sponsor as well. I'm a sponsor as well, where I work with other gentlemen.
So do you find that by you being a sponsor, that also helps to keep you personally accountable? You're like, okay, I'm a sponsor for somebody. I'm supporting somebody. I cannot let myself slip because somebody's depending on me now. Do you find that feeling at all?
I don't put that pressure on myself. I think what I find is the disease is a self-centered disease. It's been all about me for many, many years. By being a sponsor, I get to give back. And I get to be a part of the process of giving back and learning to give back and to not be so self-centered.
Wow. Someone,
my sponsor, freely gave me a life that helped me build a life that I could never imagine, and gives me his time, his wisdom, his patience, his understanding, his ear. He's given me so much, and for me to not want to give that back would be a travesty.
So, wow, that's incredible.
And there's a tremendous amount of growth that comes with it too, right? Where you get to work, walk a journey with someone where they heal you as you heal them. So when I have sponsees, I always tell them they're doing more for me than I do for them. They say it's the opposite. I say no. Like, I know how much you're healing me. Every time we sit down and we talk, I can get into funks too, right? And when I'm in a funk, I usually, a sponsee will miraculously call or reach out for something, and then it puts things into perspective and it helps me continue to heal.
And do you find, if you're having a bit of a funk, are there other things that you can do, you know, outside of reaching out to a sponsor or somebody from your group? Do you exercise? Do you get out and go for walks? Or is there anything like that that you do as well?
Nature's a big one. Nature's huge. Just getting in tune with nature, having a spiritual program, whatever that looks like. Not a religious program, but a spiritual program that works for me. Some people might not like this, but I pray, and I'm learning. I'm still learning to meditate. I still have trouble sitting for 20 or 30 minutes, but I do my best to try and meditate or get into nature with my dog.
Oh, I find most of my spirituality comes from sitting beside the ocean, and that's where I clear my head. Most times, if I need to just feel like I need to connect and I need to get back to me and have time to clear my head of all the electronics, everything going on, or stresses or pressures or something that's not going right in my world, I take my dog, I walk down to the ocean, I go sit on a log, and I'll usually sit there with my cell phone and I'll capture every bird that's on the water, I'll capture every sound, I'll get down on the ground and I'll be recording the waves as they roll in, I'll be on my stomach capturing them, and I come home with my phone filled full of all these pictures. And for me, the whole process of it is just looking at the world through a different lens and just kind of, you know what you were talking about, that meditation and spirituality. And it's amazing what being outside with nature can do.
It is. It helps for me. It helps me realize how I don't mean this in a bad way, how insignificant I am. I'm just a tiny being on this massive planet. And if I'm struggling, it's usually because I feel the world revolves around me and I'm not getting what I want, or I'm struggling with something of that nature. And the reality is the world's a lot bigger than I am. So if I can't get out there and help someone, then I need to get out to nature and just connect and realize it's okay. Like you said, look at all the birds and look at the ocean and look at the mountains and look at all that's going on around me. The world's moving, and I choose to be a part of it, or I can choose to isolate myself and be, extract myself from it. And when I extract myself, that's where the dangers lie for me.
Yeah. And so, you know, you've done a lot of great things with channeling your positive energies. And I'm going to go back again to, is it the Rewired Recovery Foundation? Now, you've had other events planned where you're reaching out and helping people. And I know you've got another event coming up during the holiday season, because that brings me to a whole other thing. And the holiday season can be a tricky time, especially for people who struggle from alcoholism or any kind of addiction, because everybody's like, woohoo, Christmas party, staff party, Friday night, woohoo, let's go out, get wasted. And I know, going back to the holiday season, I know a lot of people who've had family members that struggle with alcoholism. You know, Christmas time would come, and they'd be just like, oh no, here comes Christmas. Here comes the Christmas parties. Here comes the booze events. And, you know, how do you deal with that kind of stuff? And I know, even for myself as somebody that doesn't drink at all, I don't want to be around a bunch of people that are drinking and carrying on. I'd rather just be where it's a little bit more mellow and a bit more calm.
Agreed. Yeah. I think sometimes it's a choice, right? Sometimes we can avoid it and sometimes we can't. We all have families.
Yeah.
I have families that, my cousin and I are in recovery. So our family's becoming more and more cognitive of what's going on. And things are good, but I know there's families out there where drinking's part of it. It's just as part of the festivities. And that's what, you asked me a question about my support network and do I have someone? That's where those people come into play. And that's where the meetings come into play, is when I get overwhelmed with it, I can always call someone and say, hey, this is what's going on and this is what's coming up for me. And instead of me lashing out or trying to tell people they're wrong for what they're doing, I have to come from a place of love and understand they're just doing what they're doing. And it doesn't have an effect on me. I have a group of people that know that will remind me of why I don't need to do it, and that I can have compassion for these people.
Perfect. That is awesome. You know, and you should be really proud of yourself for where you've come through your journey. I hope that when you get up every day, you're able to take a look at yourself and say, wow, I've done this. And have good self-esteem, because take a look at how much you've accomplished and how many people you're helping along the way.
I do today. It's been a journey. It's definitely been a journey. Like there was a good part of the journey where I felt worthless, and I felt like I'm an addict in recovery. Like I'm the lowest piece of scum on the earth. And that's just what my brain would tell me. And it was my addict telling me that so that I would go back home. And today, I do my best. I do my best to do my best on a daily basis. And I wake up grateful for the life I live, and excited about all the new things that are coming my way, like putting on more events for Rewired, connecting with the community, connecting with addicts still struggling, sending people off to treatment. Like it's what a gift. Like it's I think we all, I don't know about others, I spent my whole life looking for where do I fit, what's my passion. I fit in the rooms of recovery, I fit in Rewired. I fit, this is my passion. It's to help people, it's to give back, and to see people's lives change, and to see life come back into someone's eyes. Like, what an amazing gift.
It's a gift to you and a gift to the people that you're helping. So with your Rewired, your New Year's gala that you've got coming up, this is in Victoria, right, where you're having your New Year's gala? And I think you sent me some information on it. It looked pretty darn good to me. I'm going, okay, I'm just going to read some of this here. Red carpet walk, professional photography. I can never say this word right. Is it hors d'oeuvres? Hors d'oeuvres followed by comedian Johnny Bagpipes and delicious four-course meal, dancing to mostly Motown. Woohoo, I think I could handle that. But everything looked like it was so much fun to me. And it's a formal event and it looked great.
I hope it will be great. Like most of the ideas I come up with, I think about things that I would like to do. And I've always wanted to be at a gala. I've always wanted to walk a red carpet. I've always wanted to dress up and I want balloons dropping on my head. And if I want all those things, I'm sure there's others that do too. So let's make it happen. And so that was the auspice under doing that. And we're trying to raise money to send someone to treatment in January as well. And so we get to give back, but we also get to have an elegant evening with a lot of fun, lots of laughter, and hopefully people can build memories from it. We're sending 10 or 8 newcomers as of right now. I've talked to some hairstylists out there. I've talked to a barber out there who's are going to volunteer their time to do these people that are like 8 new people from their different treatment centers that can't afford it. There's an organization getting them gowns and suits. There's the stylist doing their hairs, so they'll be able to attend and be a part of it and feel like they belong.
And so, and that's you going out there and you're actually talking to these service providers in the community and getting them on board to help out.
It is. I've also, like, we're also doing an online auction, and I made a few posts on my social media and on Facebook, and I think I probably made about 5 calls, and I've gotten 41 prizes so far, or items to auction off. 36 of them are for people saying, hey, I'd like to be a part of that. How can I give back? And so The community, our community struggles here in Victoria. Like, you just have to drive downtown. You drive down downtown Victoria, and now you can go to Esquimalt, you can go to Langford, you can go anywhere. And there is an epidemic out there for homelessness, for addictions, for opioid overdoses. There's a lot going on. I think people are feeling it, and people do want to help and do want to make a difference. And I always say, if you want to make change, be a part of the change.
So, absolutely. Yeah. Good for you. Well, hopefully by my sharing your story, it can encourage other people to, you know, be comfortable with stepping out and helping out in any way that they can. I mean, even going back to you mentioning you have a hairstylist who's offering to do somebody's hair. Maybe these are things that we take for granted sometimes. And, you know, just having that little bit of extra support, because going back again, everybody is a human inside and we all want to feel good about ourselves.
Agreed. It's I think one of the I used to work on the front lines, and one of the common things I heard from people that are out there was I wish people treated me with dignity.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't have to do a hairstyle. You don't have to, if you can't give back, you don't have to give back, but what you can give back by walking by and looking the person in the eye and say, hope you're having an okay day.
Yeah.
Rather than diverting your, so many people will walk by someone struggling and look the other way or clutch their purse. And maybe you do got to clutch your purse. I don't know, but it makes a world of difference when you look at them and you make the eye contact and you say, hey, how are you? Doesn't mean I have to sit there and do anything other than that, but just the acknowledgement means a lot to people who are struggling.
Yeah, you're still a human being. Everybody yeah. is on the inside.
Nobody right. wants to be invisible.
Exactly. So as we head into the holiday season, do you have any your own words of personal advice to people as to how to navigate the holidays as they come up? How do you deal with it?
I think just be true to yourself. Take deep breaths. Make good plans around what you're doing. If you're trying to stay sober, if you're trying to stay clean, have a plan in place, but don't make the plan yourself. Connect with someone else that you can be accountable to. Don't, when the phone feels a million pounds, use it anyways. Call someone.
And is there anything else that you would want to share with anybody?
If anyone's listening out there, this is more of a plug for Rewired Recovery. If they think they can contribute to our auction or want to help a newcomer go, you can reach me at rewiredrecoveryfoundation@gmail.com or mikemanhas@yahoo.ca. Or you could find me on Facebook.
Perfect. That's just like what I did. I found you that way too. And that's really how I found you, because I knew that Soberfest had really caught my attention. And yeah, I did a little bit of searching and found you that same way too. And I'm so glad that I did. I hope we can stay in touch and maybe touch base again in the spring or something, find out how things are going and what other plans that you might have underway when summer's coming up. It would be great to stay in touch.
That would be amazing. On a side note, there will be another Soberfest. I'm talking with the city of Langford, and we're working on getting a location, a bigger location.
Wow.
And the city's on board, where they're trying to support us. They don't know how they can support us, but they're all ears. They're all positive. They've all been super supportive so far.
Wow, that is great. I'm really happy to hear that. And maybe some of our other communities might be able to pick up on some of it and try it in other areas as well too, because certainly the issues that you've talked about are not isolated to where you live. It's a widespread issue, not just in our province, but you know, pretty much nationally. I think you're hearing there's a lot of issues, and maybe this can help to share ideas with other people on how to help.
Agreed. I don't, when the epidemic, it started becoming news in 2016, I think we had about 900 people died that year.
Oh.
Last year it was over 2,200, and we're on pace for over 2,200 this year as well. And so we're losing over 6 people a day.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
No, not good. No. Well, Mike, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join me here today. And maybe I'll put your contact information in my show notes as well. So if anybody does want to reach out to you regarding the Rewired Recovery Foundation, they can send you an email as well. And I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity to come on. Okay.
You bet. And I'll watch for news just to see what else you have going on. Thanks again, Mike. You're wonderful.
Okay, have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to click like and share it so others can enjoy it also. Join the Lindy's Audio Cafe podcast group for updates. Oh, and positive reviews are always welcome as well. Check the show notes for updated links. Thanks again for listening. Have a great day.